Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm Bob Ginsberg. And if you're on video, you're seeing Tom and Melissa Gould, our co-hosts for the evening. We've been doing the show a long time now, haven't we?
Yes. How long, Bob? How long would you say?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. I have no idea. Yeah.
You know, I recall back, I think it was 2012 when we had that big hurricane on Long Island, and I was driving up afterwards, and I think you and Fran and Tom were doing the radio show without me. And I remember on my drive to Massachusetts calling in to the program. You might recall back in the day, I always identified myself as Juliet.
I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that. Oh, there's Juliet. Yeah. Who that was.
And I did think it was interesting when one of our mediums then, after that date, gave birth to a daughter and named her Juliet.
Juliet, I guess of a subliminal message that you sent them. So this is the show, in case you're not familiar, you haven't listened to the show before, where we address some of the questions that you have, and some of you have sent in emails. We would love for you to call in and with a question, or just if you want to share something about a personal experience. The number here is 888-627-6008. And we do have some questions that people have emailed. Sometimes there's an overlap and, you know, but then sometimes there's not. It's just that people tend to ask very similar questions, which is, you know, understandable. You know, before we get started, I have a question, which I'll throw out to you. You know the way my mind works. It's sometimes
scary.
So what I was thinking of this morning when I was lying awake at, you know, 4 o'clock trying to go back to sleep. So we're familiar with cryogenics, right? That's what it's called, where you freeze,
freezing,
you know, whatever. So if somebody has a fatal disease and they choose to go that route, you know, hoping that basically they're being put to death and frozen in the hope that at some point in the future, and they don't know whether it be 5 years or 10 years or 100 years, when a cure is invented, that they could be brought back to life. So the question would be, if you go that route, does your consciousness or soul travel to the other side?
Would it be like being in a coma? Maybe not.
No, because I would think of like, if you're a frozen block of ice, you pretty much meet every definition of death, right? So, you know, so part of me says that, yeah, I would think that then you would, your soul would, consciousness would move to the next world. Of course, that raises all sorts of questions, as if the miracle of science, you know, 50 years from now, they develop a cure for what you had and you're brought back to life. Then what happens?
Yeah.
Like Rip Van Winkle? You don't know anybody.
Whoops, you're going back down.
I guess it would be similar to the near-death experience where you're clinically dead and yet you are revived and you come back into your body. So since time is irrelevant on the other side, it could be 100 years and then you come back and there you are. And,
right.
And so, I guess the most accurate and probably scientifically correct dealing with this topic is the movie Sleeper with Woody Allen and Diane Keaton. That's pretty much how it would be, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Would you choose that, Bob? Would that be something you would consider?
I don't think so. I mean, so what if it came back in 50 years? I mean, how would you handle anything? Everybody that you knew is gone.
Yeah.
And then you're in this futuristic world, or who knows, we could be going the other way. Yeah. You could be in this ancient world. But so I don't know whether I would opt for that. I think I would just take my chances in the next world.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
You know, you're reminding me, I don't know whether I kept it or donated it, but at the end of one of our retreats coming home in an airport bookstore was a Time magazine, and it was about the afterlife and a lot of interesting articles. And one of the articles was about a fellow, I assume he was rather wealthy, young and in good health, but he was spending every moment of every day being as healthy as possible to do everything known to man at this point to stay young and, you know, all his body parts in good working order. And everything he did just sounded like, how is he enjoying life? Because it was just so much, everything he ingested, every movement he made, everything was with the thought of, how do I prolong my life? So is that a life worth living? If it's your whole goal is just to stay alive and kind of nothing else, you know, no socializing to speak of. He had to sleep a lot because that apparently was a criteria for staying youthful.
Yeah. Well, listen, what about the monks who live in silence? And, you know, I mean, is that a life worth? I mean, they would say, yeah. I mean, they would say that their life is fuller than our life, you know, because they've got this, you know, connection. So I don't know. It's a difficult question. We have another one that came in. It said, is each of us able to communicate with our loved ones who have passed over? Well, yeah, I mean, theoretically, yeah, a lot of us can't do it. But I think that we always say that everybody has some degree of intuitive ability, right? Just that some are much, much better at it than others. So I think that worded it correctly, saying, is each one of us she said able. I would say capable.
You know? Right. Right. That's a good distinction.
Yeah. So there was another question. What are your thoughts on my 22-year-old son who was more inclined to communicate through signs to his girlfriend versus me? Is it that he's still a young adult who needs his independence? Is it possible that he's ashamed to face me given the way he passed? This is from Julie. We notice a lot that people communicate through others as opposed to directly to you. So it's not unusual or surprising that your son would communicate through his girlfriend. Now, could be a lot of reasons for that. Maybe he feels he has a better connection. When I say a better connection, I mean transference of thought. You know, maybe it's not a great it's not a synchronous vibration, you know, with you, and it is, you know, for the daughter. What do you think about the other part? Is it possible that he's ashamed to face me? What would you say?
That sounds like there's more to the story than we know.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think once you cross over, you don't have shame necessarily. It depends. Again, there's more to the story. I'm thinking of readings that we've seen where people come through who were abusive in this life, and you know, the sitter doesn't want to talk to them because they were horrible people, but they came through because they saw the errors of their ways once they've crossed over, and they're coming back to apologize. So, I think it's kind of ties in with the last question of, are we capable of communicating with our loved ones? And it's another analogy I use is, well, violin, anybody can play the violin, but only a few people can play it well enough to play in a concert. So, and if you really want to play in a concert, you have to practice at it. There's a lot of practice that you can do. I'm actually right now in the middle of reading a book by one of our facilitators, Dr. Jeff Tarrant. It's a book called Becoming Psychic, an excellent book. He studies brainwaves of psychics and mediums and that sort of thing. But then he includes in his book, you know, try this yourself. And he teaches you, he shows you ways that you can enhance your abilities in this regard. And so there are ways and methods and even classes you can take to increase your chances of being able to communicate. Again, what you mentioned or alluded to earlier was we're all on different frequencies, on different brainwaves. Why some mediums can talk to some people on the other side and not others is a lot to do with their vibrational level and what frequency the energy is vibrating at. And if the medium can get their energy up and the spirit get theirs down to a place where they can communicate, that's when you can communicate. And for us to do that, it would take a lot of practice and doing things to enhance your abilities.
You know, from the question, it sounds as though at least the girlfriend is sharing with her boyfriend's mom the readings, or the information that she's getting from him, unless it's just to say, guess who I heard from last night, and doesn't share anything more about it.
Yeah, maybe he's using the girlfriend like sort of to pave the way, you know, to,
yeah,
you know, for
hopefully.
Mom. The thing is, when she says, you know, maybe he's just a young adult who needs his independence, I don't think there's really, that applies in the next world, you know, where you need your independence. That's a human physical world thing, you know. So
also depends on the kind of information he's bringing through. I mean, there's all sorts of things, something to help somebody or information they might need for some reason.
Right.
And maybe he has more reason at the moment to share things with her. Maybe she's going through a tougher time or struggling, and I'm sure the mother is as well, but maybe he has ways, different ways to help each one of them.
Right. My mother-in-law lost her son when he was 18 years old by suicide. She had just passed herself 2 years ago. Is there a chance she's with him?
I'd say a very good chance.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we do see that, families, you know, get reunited after the death. And as Tom mentioned, there's no time and space over there. So the passage in our years is immaterial over there. So mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, I mean, there's not only a chance, there's a pretty good chance, you know, an excellent chance that they're together. Let's see. Today would have been my son Marco's 36th birthday. He died when he was 31 in 2020. My youngest son and brother to Marco, Christian, died when he was 16 in 2010. My question is, are they together? Or do families stay together after death? And if so, are they happy together? Are all things loving and kind now? They died 10 years apart. Does that have meaning? Well, we just...
Yes and yes and yes.
Yeah, similar to the other question. Yeah, I mean, families do stay together. Are they happy together? We sure think so, right?
I would think so. I mean, again, the accounts from our near-death experiences is that it's you're surrounded with an incredible feeling of love and joy when you're on the other side. So I do believe that applies to everyone.
And I suppose if there was a rift in the relationships within families, there's healing on the other side too.
Right. And, you know, and the thing about, again, with 10 years apart is meaningless. And the other thing about, are all things loving and kind? Tom just addressed that, but that's all indications, you know, because you lose the ego, you lose the greed, you lose the hatred, just pure emotion where we think that compassion and love dominate. So I think that it's that it is loving and kind, you know, on the other side, but not in the sense that a lot of people, especially that subscribe to religion, you know, think that it's all people lying around on clouds. But you know, it's a lot of things that are going on, you know, activities, not in the way we know them, but.
I think if you're living a life that's hateful and greedy and all the bad things that you can do, and if that's the life you've chosen, when you get to the other side, it's not a matter of punishment necessarily, but it's a matter of awakening to know where you went wrong and to work on yourself, whether it be reincarnate to try it again or a variety of means on the other side with guides and whatnot to help you straighten out.
Why do some mediums close their eyes when they're doing a reading?
I've thought about that. I know during the certification process that Forever Family Foundation conducts, we frown upon that, but I could see it's a way to just sort of shut out. It's the point Tom makes when readings can be successful or even more so over the telephone. You're not looking at the person, reading their reaction, reacting to their reaction. You're just giving the information. I'm speaking as a medium, giving the information that you receive as a medium without, they didn't like the way I said that, or, I better not bring up that person. I would think it's something along those lines. What do you think, Tom?
I was going to say that, I think it's like a focus mechanism, you know, shutting out some of the other senses so they could just, you know, hone in on what they need to do. I mean, how many people close their eyes when they meditate, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to get in that zone, so you close your eyes to, you know, shut everything else out. I mean, even though the eyes don't necessarily have anything to do with the mind, but, you know, I mean, I've done that on occasion when I'm trying to focus on something and just try to shut everything out by closing my eyes could be helpful.
Well, people who know Tom quite well know the family members, he closes his eyes often when he's explaining a particular point or situation, and his mother did the same thing. And I know if we're with family and he's done it and I go like this and he doesn't react.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I imagine, you know, like he's focusing on what he wants to say. And
that's right. Yeah.
And he finds it helpful.
Yeah.
You know, because you don't need any other distractions, you know.
Are you aware that your eyes are closed?
I'm not aware of it. Were they closed then?
I don't know.
Well, you know, you shouldn't have said that because now we're all going to be watching.
Yeah, okay.
He's going to feel all self-conscious, you know.
No reason to.
Yeah. You know what that means, Tom? You're not thinking about anything.
Which is, yeah.
I was just opening it up.
tell our listeners, what do guys mostly think about most of the time?
Well, it's pretty much, you know, you go through your day and all you have in your mind is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's pretty much my day.
I never quite heard it explained like that. It makes sense to me.
A lot of things now make more sense, I imagine. Oh, that's what.
Do some people in the spirit world choose not to communicate with those in the physical world?
I believe so. I have a feeling there are many reasons why that's possible, too. We often hear, I know in some readings that I'm guessing they were for you, Tom, your mother rarely speaks, but your dad is always the prominent voice, and that's how she was in real life. She deferred to your father and allowed him to speak. That was their relationship, so could be the same on the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the mediums will say that if somebody was extremely private in their physical life, and sort of secretive, maybe they're the same there, you know? I mean, that's a possibility.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Also, might it be that they don't want to run the risk of being misunderstood, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, that brings up the story of a woman who was so desperate to hear from her husband, and one night at the foot of the bed, he materialized in front of her, and she screamed and said, don't ever do that again. So, you know, it's a fine line. You want to comfort the person who's looking to hear from you, but you don't want to scare them. So,
yeah, I mean, and that comes up a lot, you know, because, you know, fear, we've talked about that a lot, you know, fear kind of dominates anything that goes on beyond our physical senses, you know, so.
That's true.
That has to do with media. We have Karen on the line who has a question. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Yeah, my question is, every time I have a dream with somebody that passed, a loved one, a friend one, and when I wake up from the dream, or actually come back from the different plans, my body is so tired. And I never understood why. And just really quick, my parents, they used to go in the meetings with Alan Kardec.
Oh, yeah.
I'm from Brazil, so, but I live here in Bristol, Connecticut. So then my parents became Buddhist. Then, of course, I became Buddhist. But I never lost this sensitivity of feeling people, so listening, smelling. But lately, every time that I have those dreams, I feel so tired. I don't know if you guys would have an answer for me.
Well, you know, Karen, that makes sense to me because, you know, many of the mediums will tell us that after they do a reading, they're physically exhausted. And that's why they, you know, there's a limit to how much they could do. So, I mean, when you're having these dream visitation, these visitation dreams, it takes a lot of energy on your part. You're really, you know, communicating with the other side and with their thoughts, the beings of thought and energy. So it takes a lot, you know, to do that, whether you realize it or not, you know, even subconsciously. So I think that you're drained because of the energy that you've exhausted by making that connection.
Yeah.
That's just what I was thinking too, Karen. And I'm wondering if it's causing you problems with the next day, if you have to be at work or you can't function as well as you would like. And if that were the case, we've heard from our mediums that there's ways to ask spirit to refrain from visiting at certain times and allowing you to rest. To us who don't have that ability, it sounds very exciting to be traveling and getting messages and information, but I could understand how it could have an impact on your health too if it continues.
Yeah, I'm gonna give an example. Saturday, I was in Maine for a trip with my fiance, and at night, I had a dream with my dad's friend, and he sent a message. I'm fine, and just be careful with somebody close to you.
Oh.
And then I was like, I never had a dream with Joel. Joel, you know, like, I was never that close to him. But my fiance was like, Karen, you are kind of off all day. I was, of course. You know, every time I have those dreams, that's how I wake up. That's how my day functions next day.
That's difficult to deal with, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it makes sense, too, because it's such an impactful experience that you not only have you expended the energy, but now you're thinking about it and trying to make sense of it. And that ties back with sometimes spirit doesn't want to communicate because when they say, well, be careful of somebody close to you. Now the rest of the day, you're looking at everybody going, oh, why do I have to be careful?
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. But one thing, guys, I follow you guys. I always been afraid of trying to develop this in a different way, maybe to help me. But I always being afraid as well. Like, I don't know what to do.
You know, maybe working on your development, it doesn't mean you have to become a professional medium, just understand more about what's happening to you. And I don't know, Bob, do we give recommendations? I know a lot of the certified mediums listed on the Forever Family Foundation website do offer training. I don't know if there's a better word for that, that they can help with that.
Mediumship development. But, you know, coming from Brazil, I mean, you know, Brazil was a center and a hotbed of spirit communication, you know, for many, many years.
Yes.
So I'm sure that there's many, people, you know, receptive to it that are not, you know, fearful. Fearful is just this human emotion because of your upbringing and your influences. But, you know, you have to just learn to embrace it rather than fear it. But yeah, as Melissa said, I mean, there are some of the mediums on our website that offer some excellent mediumship development classes at all levels, you know, beginner and advanced. So you might want to check that out.
Yes, and try to dissuade the fear a bit because you are, you have guides. There are spirit guides that are there to help you, and they are there strictly from love and compassion, And yes, there are safeguards that you can do, that you can set out the intention that you only want to hear good and positive things, and that sort of thing. Those are the kind of things you can learn, but it's a place of love and compassion. So I would hope that you can dissuade fear from that.
Well, thank you, Karen.
I will check this out for sure. Thank you so much.
Reach out again. Let us know how you're doing.
Okay. All right. Take care. Bye now. Let's go to Juliet from Arizona. Hi, Juliet.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, yes. I can. So I understand you had a question about piggybacking.
Yeah, well, first I wanted to say I was debating whether to call in or not, but since you mentioned my name was mentioned, so I figured it's got to be.
Oh, Juliet, right.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
That's right, yeah. So that was your sign to call in.
Yeah, you don't hear my name very often, so I kind of perked up thinking, okay, maybe I should. I was going to email, but I thought maybe I should just go ahead and call, but. Yeah, I want to just ask a question about, just, I don't know, I have this inner debate about piggybacking and readings, especially group Zoom readings.
Yeah.
It seems like the person getting the reading from the medium, usually it takes a minute for the medium to identify who the person is that's trying to be communicated with. And then the person becomes identified within, I usually attend large Zoom gallery readings, so there could be up to like 100 people. So it always takes a minute to figure out like who the person is, and everyone can tell there's a lot of excitement about it, and then he finds who the person is, and then the person starts to receive the reading, and it might be like, you know, I see a young man with a red truck with tattoos, and he likes country music, and the name Joe might be significant. And then along the sidebar, you know, in the chat, people start saying, oh, I have a son who was 22 who had tattoos, whose dog's name was Joe. And then you'll get a lot of like these people along the side also identifying with the person coming through. And at first I couldn't understand, like, why are all these people, it almost felt like, I don't know, it kind of struck me as being a little disrespectful, but now it almost seems like it's the norm, you know, for people to also feel like their loved ones are coming through in this one particular person's reading. And and the people who host it call it piggybacking. So I just want to debate back and forth whether that is that like being disrespectful to the person actually having the reading, or is this common and I'm just being old and persnickety about this sort of thing?
Well, I was, you know, piggybacking is a term that a lot of the mediums use, and sometimes it has different meaning. I mean, it's meant to describe multiple spirits coming through in a spirit, you know, connection. But then, you know, sometimes like we'll do an event and there'll be two mediums up on the platform. And then, you know, so one medium starts reading somebody in spirit, you know, communicating with somebody in spirit. And then the other medium picks up on that, you know, and then, you know, they also call that piggybacking because they're picking up on the same spirit and adding to it. But, you know, what you describe in a gallery reading, just the nature of mediumship readings and gallery settings is that the mediums are really like detectives because they're up there. You said there's 100 people. So just imagine, let's say they have 50 spirits coming through. How do they separate that? You know, how do they make sense of it? So they kind of have to piece it together. And that's why, as you described, they go back and forth a little bit until they hone in on the spirit that they're talking about. Of course, We're assuming that it's with a capable evidential medium. I mean, you could have an unscrupulous medium who's just throwing stuff out there, hoping that people are going to, in a group of 100, some people are going to, you know, accept it, you know, but it's not unusual, right? I mean, Tom and Whistle, we see even in individual readings that happens all the time. The medium is doing a one-on-one reading and they got two or three different spirits and they have to figure out, the sitter has to figure out and the medium has to figure out who they're talking to, right?
True. And I know at some of our events with the in the large group setting, there are a number of things that happen. And I've used the term piggybacking to those in attendance who, after maybe, you know, one night of it, we often have two nights of large group readings, and some disgruntled people who didn't get a, are disappointed that they didn't get a message, we remind them that those similarities, like I know from a gallery reading, maybe a Zoom one or two that I've attended also online, and the medium will ask, well, how many pieces of this information can you claim? And, you know, they keep claiming them, and a lot of people get a little upset, like, well, those relate to me too. You know, why are you, and that could be what you're referring to is, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so unfortunate, and they're often, you know, a little louder. They can speak a little louder and claim things.
Yeah, one of our mediums, one of our mediums does a demonstration where he says, we've got a group of people, about 50 people in a room, and he says, okay, on the count of three, start telling me something about your loved ones. And he goes, 3, 2, 1, go. And then the whole room is chatter, 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 chatter. And then we all look at each other like, well, we didn't hear anything at all. And he says, welcome to my world. And that's basically, the spirits are coming through. They have their opportunity, this medium. So they're throwing information at this medium. And what I understand piggybacking is just that, that, you know, I have a gentleman here who was in the military and, you know, he liked fishing and all this. And you go, well, that's my dad, or, you know, that's my husband. And it can be both, because they're both trying to get their message through. And then, as Melissa says, if somebody in the audience speaks up and goes, well, that's me, then that focuses the medium on that person, and then they hone in on the energy and are able to to do that a reading. But you will still get messages will come through that go, well, that must be for me. And yeah, that's what piggybacking is. Even though somebody else is getting a reading, you're getting a side message at
like,
the same time.
Claim it. Take it to heart. Say, oh, well, it was for somebody else. No, maybe that really was for you, and you did hear it. And, you know, give a little thanks to your loved one, because, as Tom said, there's a lot of chatter going on. And you're also reminding me, Juliet, that I know when people come to our grief retreats, they're so excited to be there. But if it's their first experience with mediums, I don't know if that's the best place to go, because there are the smallest breakout groups still have maybe 17 people in them. And it would be lovely for people to have the experience of a one-on-one reading. And I know large group settings are a lot more accessible.
Thanks
to Zoom, and they're exciting, and it's a good way to familiarize yourself with the process. But ultimately, it cannot be that rewarding. I mean, unless you're that lucky person who everything was meant for you. So I don't know if any of that really applies to you, but to anyone else listening in, I think, you know, if you're interested, try to schedule your own reading before you
I'm taking my chances throwing myself out there, you know, in the big group. It's so sensitive. Everyone's going through so much emotion, and it's such a highly sensitive
situation to begin with, and you can kind of feel there. I guess I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I can feel like different energies growing, and there is a competitive energy that grows, and there's a supportive energy that grows. But I do think you have to be aware, you know, before going into those big group readings, and be prepared for disappointment. You know, I do prepare myself ahead of now because there is a lot going on, and I do have a small group reading scheduled for myself, and then depending on how that goes, I could probably just see myself just scheduling myself individually, just because of my own individual needs. You know, that might be best for me.
You know, for me, the value of the large group settings is not necessarily getting a reading, but if you are sitting there and somebody is a few chairs away or another screen on the Zoom and they get a fantastic reading, you get the joy of knowing, yes, this is real. People are communicating, and my people are there too. I just didn't hear from them today, but I think you can go away from those group readings with a sense of knowing that it's real and it's possible.
So it's like approaching it with a generous heart, an open heart, and rooting for those who get it and know that your turn will come too.
I mean, we're always at these grief retreats, and you're in the back of your mind going, boy, it would be nice to get a reading. But then you see a young couple who've lost a child, and they get read, and you stand back and say, well, they needed it much more than I did. So, you know, I'm glad that they got the reading. And again, I go away feeling, well, I can see that if this is a real deal thing.
Well, thank you.
I agree with that, too. Yeah, that's really what I do go in. I tell myself, if one person wins, we all win, you know.
And yes.
Try to keep that going. I was just curious about your opinion on this piggybacking in particular, and if it was just considered part, just normal and part of the gallery reading or not. But I hear what you guys are saying, and it really does help me, I guess, you know, understand what's going on, I guess.
I hope you have a great reading and report back to us.
Thank you.
I'll be happy to. I look forward to your show every month.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Julia. You know, I just realized that I never turned my mic on. Were you hearing me?
Yeah, we're here. Fine. What the? Oh, are you communicating some other way?
I don't understand.
How odd is that? Is it a mic and the computer?
It's an external mic, so it should override the computer. I don't know. You know, I'm old. I forget these things. I think that would be the first thing I check. Okay, so let's see. We have question. We keep having technology advances here every day. Do you think that those in the next world will be able to take advantage of these advances to better communicate with us?
I'd say yes.
Sure.
In fact, Thomas Edison, when he died, he was working on a telephone to communicate with the deceased. Obviously never finished it. There are people who are trying to emulate his work on that, and somebody's trying to make that happen. Hasn't happened yet, but yeah, I see down the line. Again, it's all about frequency, and in particular, technology is where it's going to happen, because spirit has a way of turning lights on and off, turning your TV on, changing channels on the TV, a lot of different things that spirit can do now with the technology that's there, that I think that as it becomes more sophisticated, we can actually get to a point of communication.
I think you're right. And look, EVP's going on, electronic voice phenomenon, for decades now, but it only started after we had, you know, tape recorders were invented, right? So that was an invention. I also, you know, think that, you know, all the advances that we're going to, discoveries in consciousness, when in my second book, when the second part is all fiction, and I put out this fictional account, partly based on truth, you know, that we're able to map somebody's consciousness, you know, while they're alive, and then replicate it, you know, on the other side. So who knows where the advances are going to be coming from? But I think Tom's right. You're definitely, they're going to be looking to use whatever means that they can, you know, to get through more clearly than they do now.
You know, Bob, you're reminding me of a question I had for you a previous show. You talking about electronic voice phenomena. I had attended an event in October with some of our old friends from our afterlife discussion groups. And we were given the opportunity to hear some electronic voice phenomena that had been collected previously. And it seemed to me, and I'm sure you know more about this, that it wasn't capturing the spirit's voice, like the examples we've heard from, is it Dave Kane with his son Nikki, some of the EVP that we've played. It, do you know what it was almost like, you know, writing, oh, I'm losing my thoughts, those clipping out words from a magazine and taping them all together. So it seemed as though in this case, what we were listening to was snippets from radio programs, a word from this, a word from that, a word from that. So it was all different voices and all different tones and levels piecing together a sentence to communicate. And yeah. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, you know, also we've heard some of these voices on EVPs where it sounds computerized.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, sometimes it sounds like you can identify the person that's talking because it's like, and sometimes like you're talking to a computer. Now, I don't know that that necessarily is an indication of fraud. It's just, you know, maybe spirit has a way of putting together those, you know, those snippets to, in a coherent fashion. So that's, it's a mystery.
Would you call that EVP, electronic voice phenomena?
Yeah. Our question is whether or not it's evidential or not.
You know? I mean, to me, it's a whole lot more work because it's finding what you want to say from snippets drawn from the invisible airways that create radio.
Yeah, I know where I remember, I don't remember the specifics, but there was a researcher that was doing work like that. He was using a computer generated program, you know, and these of a million different little snippets, and they would, and they were put together, you know. What question is, are they being put together by spirit, you know, or not? So could be, we don't know. We had a caller, you know, Lisa, who said that she had a reading with an FFF medium, and a lot of the information they received was wrong. They're wondering if it's something like not connecting properly with that medium or something along those lines. Yeah, you know, the connection is not always strong, you know, and that could be, I don't know the answer to that, you know. It could be, you know, it could even have to do with physical geomagnetic, you know, forces or whatever, but not every reading is crystal clear. The medium could have been having an off day, or they were getting information but they were interpreting it wrong, which, you know, sometimes mediums make a mistake like that. So you know, when you say like not connecting properly, you know, like you know, I tend to think of that more of like the conditions were not right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it happens. I wish it didn't happen, but it's not an exact science. You know, what we have found is that the certified mediums have been more consistent, you know, than other mediums. So, unfortunately, this was obviously not a strong connection. So,
it sounds like, yeah, it sounds like that certainly could happen.
Yeah.
And to no one's fault, really. Who knows how?
Yeah, and some of our experienced mediums will talk about staying out of their own way with these readings and just delivering the message they were getting. I think a novice medium, someone with abilities, gets the information and then tries to tell the sitter something in a narrative sort of way and try to make sense of it before they tell the sitter what it is that they're seeing. And then they find out later that they should have just said what the spirit said and then let the sitter make sense of it. So there, it's again, part of the, it takes practice. It takes a lot of practice to become good at what you do, especially in this realm, and some mediums are better at it than others, and that's, again, we've mentioned it before, but on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org website, we have a list of mediums that were certified by us through a rigorous set of testing, and that's a good place to start if you want a reading. And then of course people come back to us and say, well, I'm in Indiana, what, you know, what am I going to do with your mediums there in New York? And most quite a few mediums prefer doing a reading over the phone or on Skype or on Zoom or something like that, so you don't have to actually sit with the medium to get a really good reading.
Yeah, this was an FFF medium, so it just shows that, you know, not, you know, the process is just, you know, not foolproof. The only other thing I would also suggest, because I've seen it happen, I don't know whether there was anybody with you, but what I've noticed is when we conduct the medium certification process, I generally don't listen in as it's going on, and it's really foolish. I mean, I leave the room because I want to try to avoid the possibility that the medium is picking up information on me, and that's really silly because, you know, if I'm 15 feet away, what difference does that make? And, you know, but then and sometimes I'll read the transcript or I listen in. And I'm saying, oh, damn, you know, the medium's giving information that applies to me, but it's totally wrong to the sitter. You know, and that's a problem, you know. So yeah. I just wanted to throw that out there that it's possible that, you know, the medium was reading somebody connected, you know, to Elisa, but not you. So
that's true, because that, you know, her information that she was delivering could have been correct, but to the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have a lot of time left, but there's one quick question that somebody wrote in. Is it possible for a spirit to lie?
Ooh.
That's an interesting question.
Have we watched that TV show Ghosts that Lloyd talks about? I wonder if they lie.
Well, I'm sure they do. But I don't know.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
That is an interesting one. I haven't seen any evidence of that.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, well, it goes back to that same question of whether there are people in spirit that are not, haven't fully become immersed in that compassion and love, you know, phase, you know, and so, you know, are there devious spirits, you know, I mean, and
there's some evidence, you know, that there are, you know, but I think that it doesn't last long, you know. It's like
I think that lying is a characteristic of ego, and there is no ego on the other side. So I'd have to say no. That would be my guess, and it's just a guess, but that's where I lean.
Yeah, not in my afterlife that I know afterlife to be. There's no lying.
Well, if I go before you guys,
then we'll get the lying.
I'm gonna try to lie to you, and let's see what. You know, then we'll have a definitive answer. You know. Well, we only have a minute left, so let's read Claude Swanson's Global Peace Prayer, which has taken on new meaning in today's environment. So it gets more and more important. So. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to remind everyone, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it.
And thank you, and good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.